Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts, Dana Osman, here with my friend Chavruta Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masechta Bava Metzia, daf Samech, page 60. We're going to finish out our fourth parak today. There are two Mishnayos, Ann will take one, I will take the other. I will start with the first one that actually starts in the bottom of yesterday's daf, a Nun Tet. And the Mishnah here is going to discuss certain types of practices that businesses would do that basically could somehow mislead the buyer in some way. And they're considered to be deceptive and things that you're not allowed to do. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Ein ma'arivin peirot bepeirot. Somebody cannot mix produce, you know, from one field with produce from another field. Afilo chadashim b'chadashim, even new produce with new produce, right? So you wouldn't even be allowed to take some produce from one field and you know, mix it with another field. And, you know, you would say that it was fresh, because the first case could be that maybe you're mixing two different types of produce and one is not as fresh as the other one. The second one is trying to say even new with new, we still would not allow it. Even if they're equally fresh, because when people buy things, you know, they assume that it's all coming from the same place. Right? You cannot mix new produce into old produce. So again, if we're talking specifically about grain, you can't sell old grain with new grain. Now, some of this is because the old grain, you know, also is drier than the fresh grain, and therefore the old grain can actually make more flour. So this, in a way, it's not to the benefit of the buyer. But if you wanted to sell fresh grain and mix in a little bit of old grain, some of the commentators explained that actually would be okay, because that increases the flour that you would get, and that's actually considered to be an improvement. Be'emet amru, in truth they said, b'yayini tiru la'arev kasheh barach, in a case of wine, they permitted a seller to mix strong wine into mild wine, mipinei shehu mishpicho, because the strong wine improves the mild wine, ein ma'arivin shmirei yayin b'yayin, but sellers cannot mix the sediment of wine into wine. The Gemara will go ahead and explain what that means. Aval notein lo et shmei rav, but a seller can put in its sediment. In other words, you can give sediment to the buyer if it comes from the actual wine that they're buying. So sediment can be part of the wine, of the measurement of wine, if it's the wine that they're buying. Mishanita rev mayim b'yeyono, someone whose wine was mixed with water, lo yim karenu b'chanut ela im yesh kein hodio, may not sell it in a store unless he informs each customer. And you're going to see, I'm not going to read it, there's a very cute story about Rava that he apparently liked very diluted wine. Below the tagar af alpi shahodio, and he cannot sell it to a merchant, even if he informs the merchant that it's diluted. Sheino ella l'ramopo, for the merchant is buying the wine then only to cheat customers with. In other words, why would a merchant want to buy diluted wine? It would only be to not tell the customer. You can't guarantee that he would pass that along to the customer. Makom shenahagula hatel mayim b'yayin. However, if there's a place where sellers do have the custom to put water in the wine, Yatilu, they can put it in. Hatagar notel me chamesh granot. And then we go on to, a merchant can take grain from five different threshing floors. V'notein l'toch megura achat, and put it into one silo, okay? Because then people would buy, grain merchants would basically come and buy their grain from farmers during the threshing season, and then they would store it in their own silos where they would basically sell it later. So the idea is that a merchant can mix grain that was grown in different fields, because merchants are known to buy grain from different fields and from different farmers. So nobody assumes that when the merchant sells the grain, it came from his own fields or came from one field. He can also take wine. A merchant can take wine from five different wine presses and put them into one cask, ubavach lo yehe mitz kaven larev, provided he doesn't intend to mix. In other words, if the merchant purchases most of his produce from one source that's known to have, from, you know, one wine press that's known to have very good quality, and so therefore he has a reputation of selling good quality items, he can't mix it with something not as good quality, but something that's inferior. That would be something deceptive to do. So all of these things are basically deceptive things that people do. Now, the one thing I want to pay attention to in the Gemara here is this line in the Mishnah that says, Be'emet Amru, in truth they say. So the Gemara quotes this, right, and says, Be'emet Amru, B'yayin Hitu, La'rev Kasheh, B'rach, Mipenesh, Hu, Mashbicho, right? In truth they said, in the case of wine, they permitted the seller to mix strong wine with mild wine because the strong wine improves the mild wine. And then it says, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Ada Amra, this means to say, Kol Be'emet Amru Halachahi. Anytime the Mishnah says this phrase of in truth they said, it says that that is the accepted law. Because in other words, why would you, you know, that phrase is unusual. And so when they say this, it means that whenever the Mishnah teaches this, he's saying that this is like a final halacha that cannot be questioned. And it appears in a few other Mishnayos. You'll see it's not a common phrase. But you will see it. So I just wanted to point that out. The rest of the Gemara really just goes through sort of some of these phrases and elaborates on it a little bit more. But again, the idea here is that it's giving us a list of sort of some practices that we're not allowed to do because it's considered to be deceptive to the buyer.
So I just want to make a comment on the very last piece of Gemara before the upcoming Mishnah. It says, Makom shenagula til mayim b'yayin yatilu, in the place where they are accustomed to put water into the wine to dilute it, right? And everybody knows that, then you could do that. It's not considered, you know, watering down the wine in an inappropriate fashion. But what strikes me about this is that the chapter, and we all learned this together, you know, 2 years ago, I guess, a long time ago, in Psachim, the fourth chapter of Psachim, it talks about Makom Shenagu, this same phrasing of in the place where people are accustomed to, and there it's talking about, are you accustomed to doing malacha on Erev Pesach or not? And it just strikes me that the phrasing here is, you know, is reminiscent of that, but in our holiday time right now, it's just kind of nice. I don't want to read too much into it, but it's there.
Yes. I look, these phrases are important and they're used very purposefully in the Mishnah. It's not just a way of writing.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to pick up the next Mishnah, which is our last Mishnah of this chapter. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo yichalek achenvani kaliyot ve'egozin letinokot, mipnei shehu margilin lavo etzlo. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you have a shopkeeper, a storekeeper, he cannot hand out, now this is toasted grains or nuts, to children, and the issue is the concern that he would get them to, I feel like it's like feeding the cats in Jerusalem, Lahavdil, right? Meaning the idea that you would get them accustomed to come to his shop, it's like bribing them to come to his shop at the expense of other shopkeepers because they've, you know, seduced the children with these treats. V'chachamim matirin, but the sages as a majority group do allow it. And likewise, the concern is that you cannot reduce, it says the shar, you cannot undersell your neighboring shopkeepers below the accepted market rate. But the chacham and the sages say that if you want to do so, then you should still be remembered positively, right? Zachor latov. It's not really a violation in the way that it sounds like it might be. The Mishnah continues, Lo yavur et agrisin divrei Abba Shaul v'chachamim matirin. Abba Shaul says you cannot sift grisin. So I think of grisin as the barley, but it seems here to be translated as ground beans. Again, some kind of legume that you're trying to separate out the waste. So you want to make sure that you're not charging for, I don't know, junk that's together with the legume itself, right? That's the idea. But the sages allow it, meaning you can charge it without worrying that you're violating this kind of overcharging. Umodim shelo yavor me'alpi megura sheino ella kigonev etayin. The rabbis agree, right, that you can't sift only from those beans that are close to the opening of the bin. You can't make it look like you've done sifting throughout the whole thing and then only do the top. So the point is, you know, then you're really, it's an act of deception and that's not considered acceptable. Ein mafarkasin lo et ha'adam v'lo et ha'behema v'lo et ha'kelim. And then likewise, it says you cannot adorn a person. That means, you know, whether you're going to sell them on the slave market, which seems kind of like an, it jumps in there in an odd way to me. It's kind of startling, but also not an animal or other items that you're looking to sell them. Meaning you have to sell any product that you're coming to sell. You have to sell it unembellished. The idea being that you're only selling what is there and not deceiving the buyer that they're going to get something lesser than what they can see because you've embellished them in some greater, more decorative kind of way. So Gemara takes, you know, asks here, what is the reason of the sages, right? Going back to the beginning of the Mishnah, my tamay de rabbanan to amarle anam fliginu amagoz amguze veet plige shiske. Meaning the question of the permitting of the toasted grain and the nuts that you could hand them out to the children, the storekeeper can then say to the competitors, I'm handing out nuts and you're going to hand out something else, right? Meaning some other treat, some other candy, meaning anybody, any shopkeeper can do this same practice without it being like against the law that you're, I don't know, trying to entice the children with an advantage that somebody else isn't doing. Let the other person do the same thing, right? Like there's no rule against that kind of, I would say, even a healthy competition. Reducing below market rate, you know, the question again is, you know, why is that acceptable? And the idea being that if you lower your rate below the market rate, what happens is, and the economists among us will know this better, then you're easing the market rate, meaning everybody will then be forced over time anyway to lower the market price, which is not inherently a bad thing. And I'm, you know, really quite taken with the fact that this, it's a very sophisticated response, I think, from the sages here. I want to just jump to this question of adornment at the end, because it is also what closes off our parak here. Right? It says that so it says, for example, and I'm going to do some of this outside just for this in the interest of time, right? You can't, I would say use hairspray, right? You can't stiffen up the hair of an animal to make it look like it's a bigger animal than it really is. Or you can't inflate the innards that you're selling as meat, right? You can't literally deceive with, you know, soaking the meat in water, which will change the color or will make it look like it's a better cut than it might be otherwise. Any of these things, which are just truly dishonest, fraudulent practices, the Gemara's lists a big, you know, a good number of them in order to make it clear that I feel like the Gemara is saying, like, we're on to you. We know that people would do these things. You're not allowed to do them. And that comes to not putting fringes on a cloak and not, again, not putting any kind of adornment on any kind of, on the person, right? Even as they come to a slave, don't dye a man's hair and beard to make him look like he's younger, right? And so on. The last bit here says, "Atal kamed Rav Papa Bar Shmuel." The slave appears really in the section right before. He comes to Rava and says, "Buy me as your slave." And Rava says back to him, "You aniyim b'nei beitcha," meaning you should let the poor be the members of your household, meaning not to go acquire slaves. There are other people who could help. There are poor people who could help. So the slave then went to Rav Papa Bar Shmuel, the Zvena, and says again, and like presumably to ask him to buy him, and Rav Papa Bar Shmuel did so. Yomachad amarle ashkian maya azal chavrei l'reishe v'ledikne. So Rav Papa says to the slave, give me water to drink. And so the slave goes and he removes the dye and whitens his hair and his, meaning now he looks old now, right? And amarle chazi da ana kashish miavuch. The slave says to Rav Papa, see that I'm older than your father. Kare anafshe. And then Rav Papa says, meaning the point being, like, I'm too old to serve you. I can't bring you this water. I am decrepit in my own right. Kare anafshe, tzadik mitzara nechlatz v'yavo achar tachtav. And so Rav Papa says then about himself that the righteous person is delivered from trouble and another comes in his stead. Meaning the idea being that the righteous person, Rava, didn't have to worry about a problematic troublesome slave, whereas Rav Papa himself, you know, came in his stead of the righteous person and did buy the slave, and then he's here now having regrets because the slave literally put one over on him and says, oops, I can't actually do any of this work.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a funny story. And also the way, you know, he says at the end that he, you know, he made a mistake. He basically admits that he made a mistake at the end, that he should have hired a poor Jew as opposed to hiring a non-Jewish slave.
It's also a little bit of a strange place to end the chapter, except for that. Okay, meaning like, you know, we're ending with kind of this piece of Agadata, which is what? A good rule of thumb for people to take a lesson from, as opposed to it being, I don't know, more straight up halacha, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. It is a funny way to end. All right, and with that, we will end the fourth parak. That's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadra website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.